But as it happens, in fact, most paid programming work is the development of custom software. Now, that business could be done perfectly well in a free software world. The same clients would have to pay the same people to write the same programs. Even, of course, any client that's sensible will say, deliver it as free software. They're going to pay for it to be written. They're fools if they don't insist on getting full control over what's been written. But they'll still have to pay, because nobody's going to write that software if they're not paid.
And does this work?
Yeah, there are people doing it already, and lots of them. Several years ago, I went to a free software business event in Paris, and they told me that the free software companies in France employed 10,000 people. Of course, they were not all programmers. In any software company, not all the staff are programmers. So I'm sure it was true in that case as well.
I have a question about the philosophical background of the free software movement, and it's sometimes described as being utilitaristic. I think there's also connections to transcendentalism.
I don't know what transcendentalism is.
Okay, well, then I guess you won't be able to answer.
I believe in human rights, and I advocate also a welfare state. We should run society for the good of everyone in it and not for the sake of the rich primarily. And therefore I believe in democracy, which means that the many who are not rich join together so that together they are stronger than the rich and they can prevent the rich from making society serve mainly the rich. That's what democracy is for. Today, in many countries, we have democratic form, but democracy is not functioning. We need it to function. But I don't know but even though democracy is not working very well, I don't know any other way we can stop the rich from turning society into their own exploitation machine. If somehow or other, those of us who are not the rich ones, not the ones who would have an advantage over everyone else, have to join together to stop those who are individually more powerful from reshaping society so that it mainly serves them.
What do you program in your free time?
I don't anymore. I don't have time for programming. My work, which is leading the free software movement, is so time-consuming that it leaves no time for me to write programs. But anyway, I couldn't write programs now as well as I used to. I'm old. I don't have the same memory I had 20 years ago. I can't work on a large program and do as good a job as I could have then.
Do you think that could you please be honest, if you like the software and use it, could you please pay me?
Well, this asking for donations is not a matter of being honest. Oh. It's not lying if you don't send money. But it's nice to send money, and it's fine to ask users to do so.
So you shared with us the ideas of free software. What would be your vision about a touchable world, hardware, and a free hardware?
Well, we can't make our own computer hardware at present. 3D printers don't make chips. This may change. The day when we can make our own computers from designs, then we will need to work on free designs and reject the non-free designs. Because this principle applies to all kinds of works that are designed for practical use. Now, that's not all works. For instance, art is not, artistic works are not designed to be used to do practical jobs. They're designed to be appreciated. And then there are things like my speech and my essays. Well, they're not designed to be used to do a job. They state what I think. So there are various different kinds of ways a work can relate to society and contribute to society. But one of these categories is the work is made to be used in doing jobs. Those works need to be free. So a hardware design, if people can use it to make hardware, that needs to be free. Likewise, textbooks need to be free. We've seen a major mistake in the academic community. Many schools are producing what they call open educational resources, and nearly always they carry a license that is not free. Quite commonly, they use CC, non-commercial share alike, and the non-commercial restriction means it's not a free license. They're making a mistake, because educational works ought to be free, and reference works need to be free also.
The heart of the users and the hearts of men are very easily to be corrupted by features or some candy, and there will always be someone who is willing to give up his freedom for someone other who is selling some proprietary software to do his work faster, to do it now or tomorrow. Because
that's not necessarily true. If people are aware enough that this is an abusive practice that needs to be resisted, we can resist in various ways.
Yes, of course, you have to resist, but sometimes it's very hard to resist.
That's right. Sometimes the struggle is difficult. So we have to fight anyway.
You mentioned binary firmware blocks. I think it's very hard to draw a line
draw a line between what and what?
Between a binary firmware block which you're loading from the kernel and a binary firmware block which is on a flash chip on the device or a FPGA or something else.
I disagree. There is a clear distinction to be made. But first of all, let me explain this. What this fits into. I totally object to having non-free software installed in a computer. On the other hand, I have a microwave oven, and I don't know whether there is any software in it. I don't know whether there's a processor in it. How could I tell? They could have built it using some sort of small embedded processor in a program. They could have built it using a special purpose chip with circuits, and it would make no visible difference to me because no software is ever going to be installed into it. So my conclusion was, if you can't tell whether there's a processor and a program inside a device, it doesn't make any difference. So there are these two different cases, quite different. There's the microwave oven, and there's software in my computer. And in one case, it matters, and in the other case, it doesn't. So somehow or other, there's got to be a line or at least a gray area between them. Where should it go? I think the best place to put it is at the distinction between software that happens to be inside something, but we never touch it. It's not meant to ever be installed, versus software that we do install. Now, in fact, the two cases you mentioned are on opposite sides of this line. In one case, the software is in some chip, and we don't know, and why should we care? Because we're not going to install software there. It might as well be a circuit, even if it isn't a circuit. On the other case, the binary blob that's inside Linux, Well, there, it's software that you install into your machine so that your CPU can install it into a chip. And that's software installed on your machine. You can't deny to yourself that it's there.
You mentioned in your speech that we have a binary choice between writing a proprietary piece of software or doing no work at all. We should choose to
doing
do
nothing at all.
Or doing nothing at all, so that we don't harm people, we should do that. Now, taken to the extreme, I have the choice between writing a software that is proprietary but cures all cancer and not doing anything. What would you say?
I would say that in reality, you would be able to write that and make it free somehow.
Probably, but maybe it's both curing all cancer and giving terrorists the opportunity to create the optimal bioweapon.
I don't think so. I don't think that that's really what it is. In fact, there was recently a debate about whether to publish the genetic sequence of an artificially modified influenza virus that turned out to be rather infectious to ferrets. And the same debate came up, and the conclusion was publish it. That publishing it will do more harm, sorry, will do more good than harm, and anyone who wanted to make such a weapon would be able to repeat the research anyway and figure out what to do, even if it wasn't published. So you're not really going to prevent people from doing something horrible by not publishing something.
Where do you see the difference between your microwave oven and your my feature phone, where nobody can install software anymore too?
Question. That's not true, actually. Somebody can install software on it. The phone company can install software.
Yeah, but
on
maybe your microwave oven does harm to you too. You have to be suspicious.
Sorry, you're just not letting me answer. You're fuzzing the whole subject. The difference is very simple. In the microwave oven, nobody can install software, whereas in that non-smartphone, the phone company can install software. You can't, but the phone company can. That's what makes the difference. If there were software in it, but nobody could, in fact, install different versions, then it would be like the microwave oven.
But how do you know that the microwave oven company doesn't control what you eat, or?
Because it has no communication with them. There's one thing about a phone is it talks to things. they might start selling an Android microwave oven that connects to the internet, and then it might raise the issue because there could be a back door in there and somebody else might be able to install new software into it even though the user can't. But I'm pretty sure that my microwave oven has no ability to communicate with anybody except the person pushing the button.
So the next one is?
For me as an end user, it's quite easy nowadays to install GNU Linux on my computer, my PC. But it's very hard, not to say possible, to install a free operating system on my smartphone. Would you say that the growing amount of smartphones being sold and being used is a big
It is a problem. It's a big problem. And it's not just, why can't we run free software on smartphones? Well, the iThings are designed not to let people. People have to fight to get to change any software on it. And Microsoft is going to do the same thing. Microsoft is following Apple's evil practice. Android is not quite as bad, but there are several bad things in that. There are some telephone models where you can install changed software. But then many Android devices are tyrants, just like the iThings and Windows phones, and they won't let users install anything. So those are just as bad, of course. But let's look at the ones where users can install changed software. Well, it turns out you can't run a completely free version of Android because there are some libraries and firmware that are needed. So to deal with this requires reverse engineering. This is very important. If you have the technical talents, please join in the reverse engineering. We've got to do something about this.
I wanted to follow...
Let me add one more thing. I just found out recently about the Android market, which is non-free software distributed by Google, which contains a universal backdoor. Google can forcibly install and deinstall applications through it. So Android is released as free software, but the Android market is nasty.
Yeah, I wanted to follow up with this binary things, because, for example, if you are buying a hearing aid or something today, there's maybe software on it as well and stuff, and if you say it's okay for certain devices to have maybe...
I've already explained this, okay? Well, basically, you're taking an inappropriately mathematical approach to life. You can't deal with life by only drawing lines in places where there's a fundamental logical justification for the line, because sometimes you have to make a distinction, and there is no such place. So what do? You pick the best place you can find, and if it isn't perfectly ideal and satisfying, it's tough. You've got to do it anyway. Consider, for instance, the distinction between drunk and sober. Now, that's a continuum. There is provably no right place to draw that line. Wherever you draw that line, it's going to be unsatisfactory. So what's the conclusion? We can't arrest people for driving drunk? Of course not. We can. We draw a line that's somewhat arbitrary. Because that's necessary. Because it's better than not drawing drunk. So you don't have to live with the fact that in life we need to draw lines ethically and even legally that can't be at a place where you feel it's a satisfactory place to draw lines. It has to be so. And eventually I came to the conclusion proprietary software was an injustice. Well, I've continued clarifying my ideas since the start of the free software movement, but not in the direction of being more strict or less strict. It's rather that from time to time I find out about an issue I hadn't been aware of before. For instance, there was a time when I didn't know that Linux had binary blobs in it. I thought of Linux as free software, as everyone else did. And then I found out that wasn't true, that most of it was free, but pieces of it were not. So I then took action on that. And then there was the point when I realized that lots of websites had JavaScript programs that were non-free, and some of them were actually malicious. And I realized this is an issue we've got to take action on. And at some point, there was a time in the 90s when I knew about the possibility of tyrant devices, but I hadn't recognized that was mistreating the user. So it took me some time to think about it, to conclude that was something that shouldn't be done. So one of the improvements in GPL version 3 is it doesn't allow tyrant devices.
Somebody?
Yes. I would like to follow up with proprietary, Panacea, the cure for cancer. Now, I go to the other extreme and write free software that's really useful. And then, as a German hacker recently proposed, I would really like for the military not to use my really useful software.
I think that's, first of all, I wouldn't, first of all, you wouldn't be able to stop them. And the reason is that the meaning of any free software license is determined by states. And states can legislate themselves exceptions. So if you put into a license that the military can't use this, the state could decide that such conditions in a copyright-based license are not legally effective. But suppose it didn't. Suppose the Army used proprietary software. Would that be better?
Well, it would clean my conscience, at least.
My conscience wouldn't judge the same way. And the reason is, when you make something that's very general purpose, it's going to be used for all sorts of things. And you can't control what it's used for, and you shouldn't be able to control what it's used for. In any case, a program with a restriction like that is not free software. And we must reject it, because if we allowed such restrictions into the system, we'd end up with a system with a hodgepodge of different restrictions, and nobody could be sure if he could use it or not. So in practice, it would destroy the free software community, and it would do no good at all.
Okay, next question.
So you mentioned the hunger for power of the programmer, the hunger for power with the user as a motivational factor for a programmer to develop proprietary software.
Well, not for a programmer so much as for a company. And yes, the company has employees who are writing the code, but it's the executives, the management, that decide to give in to this temptation.
But this hunger for power is a motivation, of course, and a driving force behind science, behind business development, and you have to resist this mighty force by other good force.
We have to resist it where it's harmful.
Yes, but this would work out in a perfect world, but we are not living in.
Well, so what? Did I claim we were? I mean, you're not being logical. You're making statements that don't add up to logical reasoning. And I would have to guess the omitted parts of your argument. And what it sounds like is an argument that's so powerful that it's hopeless to resist, so give up.
No.
Or maybe the argument is, it's so powerful that we should join it instead of trying to resist it. But I think they're both wrong arguments. And they both lead to the destruction of civilization in less than a century. So I think that this is totally invalid, and I don't agree.
No, I'm looking for a transition between this world and the perfect world you described.
Well, I didn't describe a perfect world. That's a misrepresentation of what I said. I described practices that are ethical and unethical in the software field. Now, to act on this idea doesn't mean we have to suddenly make the world perfect. Remember, I've been acting on these ideas for almost 29 years, and I never thought I was going to have a perfect world next year. So you're exaggerating what I've said, and you're attacking a straw man which didn't come from me. This straw man, which seems to be that it's got to be perfect or give up. Well, I don't know if we'll ever make things perfect. I can see what's the right direction for us to push in.
Talking about mobile phones, especially in the defense tech. So I was trying to ask you if you mentioned that sometimes under certain circumstances it's reasonable that it's part of the device equipment capable of yours, not being open to you, knowing that
I'd rather not use the term open and closed, because those clearly relate to open source, which I'm not advocating.
Sorry for reading the wrong question. You're not able to run your free software on every piece of the hardware you have in hand in order to protect.
It's okay if there's non-free software in it, if nobody can install replacements for it, and it can't take control of the machine and do bad things to you. So, for instance, the original OpenMoCo, was designed in such a way that if only they had never released the firmware upgrade, it was satisfactory. Because, yes, there was another computer running proprietary firmware that the users couldn't change and didn't have the source code for. And what I said to them was, as long as you never release upgrades for them, it will be effectively circus, and we can ignore Well, fuck them. They've got no right to be able to install software into your computer. They can then make it malicious. And they do, remember? That's how mobile phones get turned into listening devices. So this is not just a theoretical possibility, it's a real danger. Now, the OpenMoCo was designed so that it couldn't, nothing could be remotely installed into it, at least we think so. But it's not hard to, it's not possible to check that after all. At least it was designed so that you can, so that the free software could cut it off from the antenna. And the free software could cut it off from the GPS. So some of the abuses that are possible were not possible in that phone. But there's got to be no back door for some phone company to install different software into your computer. Now, one way you can do that is if the computer that runs that program can't write that program. If it's in read-only memory for that computer, well, then you know it's not going to be changing its program. So you could design it, you can design the system so that those abuses are not possible, and then you could think of it as part of the circuitry. So I'm not saying that it can't be in there somehow, but there are ways it can be in there such that it's not software installed on our computers. And then we can tolerate it.
But there's an obvious dilemma. The dilemma is there is software on computers that changed by users who are not aware what they are doing. They can cause a lot of damage.
No.
So for example, in the phone, if the GSM stack can be replaced by the owner, then that's bad. That's obviously bad. If the GSM stack cannot be replaced by the phone company, then it's not possible to give a box.
Tough. They can't have the right. It's not a dilemma at all. They have no right to impose changes on anything in my machinery. And I won't let them have that power. I won't use equipment that gives them that power. It's intolerable power. And this claim that they can fix bugs, they're trying to justify a tremendous wrong with a minor issue. It's not important for them to fix the bugs. Let them get it right before they ship this.
The
phone company that power, and tough on them. They're not entitled to have that power over you, and they will misuse it.
Okay, there are two outstanding questions, and this is the third one. So one,
yeah,
and four. Somebody give us another.
Well, the problem
The
problem I see there, they can't implant bad firmware at the beginning. Even if it's only read-only memory. For example, I have an Ethernet card, and on the Ethernet card, there's a firmware that can, on command from the outside, send all the packets that are sent to another address or something like this. This is
bad. That's right. And circuits could also be malicious.
Yes, and this
so
is...
So, I'm not saying that firmware can't possibly do you harm. I'm saying that it's not necessarily worse than circuits.
Okay, so the ultimate goal is that we get free circuit designs and free circuit manufacturers.
Maybe something is not feasible to do that now.
No.
We can't build our own circuitry from circuit designs.
It's a long-term project.
Yeah.
So,
I would like to discuss the work of the MSF, and particularly the suits.
Sorry, what are you talking about? Can you?
Sorry, I would like to discuss into the work, the legal work of the MSF, particularly internationally. How effective would you say is the MSF at enforcing free software licenses? Is it at all involved in court disputes?
We do. But we only do it for software that's a copyright FSF, because that's the only case in which we have standing to enforce.
And are you, in light of the government that can basically change the legal framework whenever it likes, are you at all successful in that?
Yes, we're successful. But I'm sorry, you just made a non sequitur.
Okay, I'm wrong with it.
You pointed out that the government could change copyright law, but in fact it hasn't changed copyright law in a way that made any difference for this.
Okay.
Last question.
The updatability of the GSM stack, I think, what we do in the USA, we use the updatability of Windows software to install updates. And if the government say, well, we want to have some surveillance code in this machine, we do it. And I think the same will happen for mobile devices. And if a mobile device is buggy and it needs an update, there are other methods to ask the user to install this update or get a more robust infrastructure to deal with buggy devices?
Well, you know, if the user can install an upgrade, then that firmware is not equivalent to a circuit, and then it becomes unacceptable. So you can't have it both ways. You've got to either make the firmware equivalent to a circuit, which means no upgrades, or you've got to make it free software. Or, well, you could have some part that's not replaceable and equivalent to a circuit, and another part that's free software. I mean, there are many possible designs that would fit this criterion. But unless someone finds a better place to draw that line, I say we draw it there. And once we draw it there, we've got to take it seriously and not accept excuses for accepting products that are on the wrong side of the line.
Okay, so the half hour.